Coming to you from New York City, it's the Friars Club Podcast. Established in 1904, the Friars Club is the birthplace of the celebrity roast and has counted the likes of Frank Sinatra, Jimmy Fallon, Billy Crystal, Barbara Streisand, and Johnny Carson among its members. So come on in for a drink and some laughs with your host, Joe Sibilia.
Hello and welcome to the Friars Club Podcast. This is your host, Joe Sibilia, and today I am talking with a fellow Jersey brethren of mine. He's a fourth-generation baker, owner of Carlos Bakery, and the star of the hit television series Cake Boss, somebody who, he may not be thrilled to hear this, I grew up watching and idolizing for many years. His name is Mr. Buddy Velastro. Buddy, thank you so much for making time for me today on the Friars Club Podcast. How are you? It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
What's going on, Joe? Always a pleasure talking to a fellow Jersey boy, and you know, Friars Club for me is just such a iconic, memorable place. We had so much fun filming there over the years, and it's just pretty awesome to be on this podcast.
Well, it was a great episode, and by the way, I'm a Bloomfield and Belleville guy, so I'm in the backyard of the Four Seasons and what have you, and I know you're a Hoboken guy with Carlos Bakery. Now, how did you get from Hoboken to the Friars Club, and how did the opportunity come about to make a very special cake depicting Betty White for the Friars Club when they roasted her back in 2012?
You know, for me, it was really like a dream come true, right? You know, because like you said, I'm just a regular Jersey boy. And I even with Cake Boss, like the way things happened, it wasn't like I was it just circumstances and you know, everything just met at the right time and it made for, I guess, the perfect storm. And Cake Boss was born. And then as we started to, you know, become more popular, they knew that they were going to roast Betty White, and you know, we wind up being asked to make the cake. So they were like, you know, you want to participate? And we're like, absolutely. First off, growing up, I loved the Golden Girls, and, you know, Betty White's just an amazing actress, and just being able to make a cake for her. And she's funny. Like, that's the best part. It's like, right, hilarious. Like, even, you know, and God rest her soul now, but, like, you know, when talking to her and interacting with her, she cracked me up. And honestly, it was an awesome cake. Like, to do a life-size sculpture of someone is definitely a challenging cake, and to do it to such an icon like her was amazing. And really, like, going there, I didn't know as much about the Friars Club, and I just kind of got inundated in the history and the members and kind of, you know, the heritage that it's had over all these years.
Now, was that your first time at the Friars Club when you went for the consultation about the cake?
It was. It was. I really didn't. I didn't know what it was, to be honest with you. You know, going back then, I you know, just being a Jersey boy, I didn't really understand it or know what it was. And then when I went there, I was like, wow, so blown away.
So now I want to pull back the curtain a little bit, because in the episode, as depicted, they give you supposedly 24 hours to bake the cake. They're telling you bake it in one day. Now, level with me, buddy. Was that really the way it played out? Or please tell me they did give you at least 2 days notice, more than a day.
Honestly, I think we did have 2 days notice, to be honest with you. But we did make the cake in one day. That was true. It did take one day to make. It was a long day, you know, it's like all of the 24 hours. But, you know, I think because we had to make it in one day, and to be honest with you, I think we had to make it in one day, not because they gave me one day, but because I think I was doing something else somewhere else. So I wasn't in town to make the cake. So, but they were like, oh, man, we're going to scramble. So, you know, it just made for probably a good story to, like, hey, you know what? We're going to tell them we're going to make it in one day. But we did make it in one day. So that part of it was true.
Well, it was hilarious because when they pose it to you, you know, it just cuts between your reaction, like, you got to be freaking kidding me. And they're just looking at you like, yeah, one day. That's all you're going to get. It was certainly a great television, to say the least.
And you know what it was? When we had the opportunity to do it, I knew that I only had one day to build it because of, you know, like I said, it was a scheduling conflict. I don't even remember, but I had to be somewhere. And I was like, not even in the country. I was else somewhere outside the U.S. And it was just one of those iconic cakes. Like I couldn't say no to. So I wasn't happy about doing it in one day, but the roast was that day. I was flying in already, you know, schedules weren't working. So it just kind of played out that way.
So walk me through the first time you walk into the Friars Club Monastery, as they call the clubhouse. What were your thoughts when you first walked in? You saw the pictures on the wall. What was the feeling that overcame you as you walked into this cathedral of comedy and show business?
Listen, I was blown away. I mean, just really like over the top, blown away, you know. Like there's only two places in on the planet that had that whole like allure. It was the Friars Club and the Magic Castle.
Oh, right.
Right. Like those were the two like, you know, want to call it like secret handshake kind of clubs to get into. And then the pedigree and the history of them is just amazing, you know, just blown away by it and the way it's upkept. And it was really, truly mesmerizing to be quite honest.
Now, when you're baking the Betty Way cake, obviously they show, you know, the highlights of the process on television. What didn't we see on TV, and what goes into start to finish doing one of these life-size sculptures and entirely out of cake? And for that matter, let's say you did have more than a day or two to build this. If you were to build it a few days in advance, how would it keep over the course of a few days so it's fresh by the time you deliver it to the event, and that one particularly being the Friars Club roast?
You got it. Well, it's, you know, it's like putting a dead body in the refrigerator for a couple of days. It'll be all right. You
know? We're Italian. We know about
you
that,
know,
buddy.
Hey, listen. You could get a cake in the refrigerator for like 3-4 days where it's going to be okay, especially if it's all covered in fondant and stuff like that, where, you know, it's not going to dry the cake out.
The original formaldehyde.
Exactly. You get it. But I'm going to tell you a story. I the first life-size cake I did my wife, right?
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, and listen, if you are brave enough to make a life-size sculpture of your wife out of anything, I mean, you got to be brave, because you put a little extra fondant on it, she looks fat, you know, you got to watch the way you carve the cupcakes, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, you got to be a brave guy.
Definitely.
So when I did my wife for the first time, you know, you got to take measurements. Yeah. So I remembered the day before I was making the cake, like that morning, I'm like, hey, babe, I'm going to work. Come over here. Let me give you a hug. And I'm squeezing her. I'm feeling her up. I'm kind of like side trying to like, you know, proportion her up. We didn't have that with Betty White. Realistically, like, you know, you had to kind of like try to model it on someone, because the proportions got to be right. Like, all right, you look at a picture, like how big is her head compared to her shoulders and stuff like that. And you could kind of measure on a picture and blow it up and try to like scale it that way. But it's very, very hard. And you have to kind of guess, you know, based on her height, based on the things. It's a lot better if you could take someone. It's like making a custom suit for someone, right? If I was making a custom suit for you, I would check your inseam. I would check how, you know, your arms, your this, your that. You're like a tailor, but I didn't have that chance with Betty, fortunately.
So many people go to school to learn the culinary art of baking, but where do you learn to become the artist that you are? And where did the artistry come from with your cakes and all of your products? Was your father able to build that sort of stuff? Did he teach you how to do a life-size replica of people like Betty White and your wife?
Yeah. Well, listen, I got to tell you the truth. To be honest with you, my father was a great cake decorator, and he was very advanced for his time and the mediums that they had in cake decorating at the time. I often tell people I was a cake decorator at a renaissance of kind of mediums that we had. You know, when I started doing cakes, we didn't have fondant. Then we had fondant. Then we had modeling chocolate. Then we were using Rice Krispie treats. So we had all these things that we were building with that over the years allowed me to be more creative. Like, I think the creativity stems from within. So I'm a dreamer, right? If I'm driving to work and I have to dream up a cake, I'll be like, okay, what am I inspired by? Is it fall and I'm driving and I'm seeing all the colors, or is it architecture, or is it a car, or is it, you know, a woman's fashion, or you know, my wife's pocketbook, or I see things and I'm like, wow, I could turn that into cake, right? So I'm inspired, and you know, I'm a, like, hypersensor alert to see things and really pick them out. Sometimes it gets too crazy because you're so attuned, you see like a crumb in a corner. So I'm like OCD,
yeah.
And everything, like, you go in my closet, my shirts are color coordinated, everything has got to be a certain way because that's the way my mind works. But I visualize a cake in my mind, and then I try to, I have an attitude of there is no impossibility, and no matter what I have to do, and you know, it's funny because this was such an important part of Cake Boss that I learned was so important to the audience about 2 or 3 years in. But it was me being me, right? Like I'm the kind of guy, I don't like to lose. I don't want to say that I can't deliver. If I tell you I'm going to make a cake jump and spin, I'm going to do everything in my power to make it jump and spin. And I didn't realize that it was going to inspire people. Like, I would meet young kids and they would say, I watch your show. And you know what? I think I could do anything. Like, you know, you inspire me never to give up, and you always push through and you always figure it out. So once I knew that that was really happening, and it was really unintentionally, it was just me being me, it was so important for me to even push the stakes or go higher or go bigger and really never give up and show that you could do anything. And I feel like I'm a big kid at heart because I could dream it in my head. And I think there's no impossibilities. So, and then it's, how do you put that into life? Right. Cause you usually have people who are creative, right. And they're the thinkers and they dream it up, but then you have someone, all right, I'm the executor. I'm going to make sure this is how the operation is going to go. Luckily, I'm blessed where I do both.
But you certainly know how to deliver. I mean, watching Cake Boss over the years, I can hardly think of an incident where you didn't deliver on everything you promised, and you certainly did in the case of the Friars Club. Now, the part of the show that always keeps me on the edge of my seat, buddy, it's not even, are you going to finish the cake by the deadline? It's actually delivering the cake. Were you nervous in transporting the Betty White cake, and were you afraid that carrying it up the stairs and everything, it was going to topple over or it would fall?
100%, Joe. I mean, that's always the hardest thing, right? Because, you know, making it is one thing. You know, then you have to put it in a refrigerator. It's got to go in overnight. Is it going to sweat or condensate? Is it the summer, depending on what time of weather? Or, you know, all these things are factors. Then you have to wheel it. Are you going to be able to get it on the lift gate? Can you just drive it right into the truck? You know, do you need a forklift? Well, you know, and then to your point, you get to the Friars Club, you got to walk it up steps. You know, you have to build these things to last. And look, by trial and error, and the better I've gotten, I don't fool around. I'm using steel, I'm using pipe, I'm using anything I can to make sure that this structure is going to be fully, you know, it's gonna be built to last, right?
Right.
And honestly, that's something I learned even before I was the cake boss. When I started doing wedding cakes years ago, because I, truth be told, I wasn't this amazing, you know, crazy cake, you know, that like make a life size cake of someone. That wasn't what I was known for. I was really a wedding cake baker, and I would make the most beautiful wedding cakes, and I would do 40 to 50 every weekend, and I would deliver them all over the tri-state area. And in the beginning, I remember, like, my heart, at the end of a Saturday night, I would be like, oh, thank God, all the cakes made it. Because, you know, but there would be plenty of times where I would get the call, and I would be home with my family at 6 o'clock at night. The maitre d' knocked into the cake. Could you come and fix it? Or you would have to do things. Or a cake would topple or something would happen. So I being the problem solver that I am, I was like, I got to figure out a way that these cakes ain't falling down. Now, if somebody's, you know, smashes it, it's one thing, but I got to make sure that they're going to do it. So I designed systems and kind of structures so that you could really like stand on top of one of my cakes.
Yeah, I can't even move a couch. Forget about moving a cake. I believe me, it would be like Lauren
sometimes
Hardy.
They're heavier than a couch, bro. Let me tell you.
I could never. You've really put the pound in pound cake. Now, going back to the roast for a second. So now, did you actually get to attend the Betty White roast, or were you waiting at the club for them to get back?
I did, and I literally pissed my pants. I never laughed so hard at a roast, and that was my first roast. You know, I've seen them on TV or seen clips of roasts or whatever, but to sit through it and hear what they had to say, and it was just so funny.
Do you remember any jokes specifically, any of the performers specifically? Did you have a favorite line or a comedian of the night?
Oh, I don't even know if I can say it. I mean, there was so many of them about her being, you know, old and this and that and sexual and this. And it was hilarious. Hilarious.
I mean, Regis Philbin was there. Katie Couric. They did videos from David Letterman and all different celebrities. I only wish I could have been there that night. It must have been quite the event. So now, who came to the after party when you were there and you're waiting for Betty White to get there and to deliver the cake? Did any of the celebrities come back for that? And what do you remember about the after party overall back at the monastery?
Well, the after party was great. A lot of the people who were there came back. I think Regis came back. I do think, and you know, listen, being in different things, you wind up going on Regis and Kelly or, you know, and so you knew everybody and stuff like that.
What do you remember about Regis? As you're an idol of mine, Regis is an idol of mine, and I grew up modeling myself after him. But what do you remember about getting to know Regis a little bit over the years?
All right, so I'll never forget the best Regis moment for me was he came to my bakery and did like a segment or whatever, and we were doing a crossover between Cake Boss and that, and it was, you know, I was gonna be on my show and they were gonna be on their show, whatever, and my producer's like trying to tell Regis like, all right, Regis, this is what you gotta do, whatever, and Regis is like, listen, fuck off, I know what I gotta do, turn the camera on, and like but it was so funny, and I was just laughing because I was laughing because my guy was like telling Regis like, oh, this is how you have to act. Like I know what I got to do. Like, you kidding
me? I'm Regis.
And it was like one take. It was one take. It was perfect. We had so much fun and it made for the best TV. My producer there, they're like, you know.
That's great.
This is so funny. But he was always so nice too. Like off camera, he was just a cool guy. You know, he had swag and style.
This was a guy who really grounded out for years. I mean, he started in local television in San Diego, and he would get a national show. He did one for Westinghouse Syndicated. That went away. He was Joey Bishop's sidekick. That went away. And, you know, and really wasn't until his 50s where he really made it. So I don't think he forgot where he came from and how difficult it was to get to where he was in the business. And he always treated people with the respect and the courtesy they deserved, unless you tried to direct them.
But and the other thing is, again, doing live TV is so hard.
Right.
I mean, listen, I love Kelly, too. I mean, I give it up to Kelly Ripa, too. I mean, they're machines or Rachel Ray. I mean, it is so spot on. And so when you're around people like that, it inspires you to be better at your craft and what you do because you see how wonderful they are. Same thing. It's like being inspired by a comedian, how funny they are, you know, and stuff like that.
Now, Betty White sees the cake. You pull back that thing that they have covering it up. Were you surprised by Betty's reaction, just how shocked she was when she saw it? Were you satisfied with the way everything turned out?
So satisfied. I mean, it was just, I couldn't have made it for a better person. I mean, or more of an icon. I thought it looked like, I mean, it was pretty scary. I think that was probably one of our best cakes, the way, you know, like person to person. It looked pretty damn good.
It did look really good, and the nice touch was you had the Sternos at the bottom among the the Rice Krispie treat and fondant coals. That was really a nice touch, I have to say. Betty White is not the only fryer that you've turned into a cake. You also made a cake of Frank Sinatra, not quite of the scale of Betty White, but it was for when they were doing the Broadway show Come Fly Away. Now, being from Hoboken, your family, I believe, has ties with the Sinatra family, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely made cakes for them over the years. My dad, not me. I mean, that was before my time. But, you know, I mean, listen, you, there's so many Sinatra stories of when he would come back to Hoboken and he would go to the docks, right? And my uncle was a longshoreman, and he would give out $100 bills to the guys. Like, he was a cool cat, man. He just had a swag, a style about him, you know. He would fly a guy in from California to Hoboken to get bread from his favorite bakery, you know. They would call him Sticks, you know. And that's how he was, you know. He was amazing. He really, really was. But when there's growing up in that Hoboken, you get something ingrained into who you are, and I think it never leaves you. You never forget it. You never forget where you come from. And I don't think Sinatra did. And, we're so proud that, you know, he was born in Hoboken.
And, of course, we're proud of, because he was, for many years, the abbot of the Friars Club. He was, you know, the head honcho with the Friars. So he was certainly
chairman,
an integral.
The board, baby.
That's right. Integral part of the organization. Now, buddy, before I let you go, a couple more things I want to ask you. One is, more of a personal question for me, because my mother is a very good baker in her own right. She's more like the cookie boss, because every year at Christmas, my mother feels the need to rent out an industrial kitchen to do the baking, and I'm sort of dragged into, and I've realized that the baking gene hasn't rubbed off on me. So what would your advice be for me to start baking? Should I start out with the Easy Bake Oven and move my way up from there?
I don't know if you have to go that bad to go to an Easy Bake Oven, but... Listen, you know, whether you start to experiment with it, have some fun with it, you could try using box mixes and then graduate into scratch mixes and see your love of it. You know, I mean, if you make cupcakes and they look like crap, odds are they'll probably taste good. So
if it looks like crap, it's going to taste good. That's it. Buddy, why do you think the Friars Club continues to... be a source of fascination to so many people in so many different industries, your industry and the entertainment industry, sports, music? Why do you think the Friars Club continues to endure amongst the general public?
I think honestly it's the people who are in it, right? You know, those people from all different walks of lives who aspire to be part of it, right? You know, it's like, you know, Frank Sinatra was in charge. Well, I want to be in there. Frank was in there. Or I want to be in there because Betty was in there, or whatever it is. And it's bringing out the next generation of talent through all the different mediums, like you said, whether it be sports, whether it be entertainment, whether it be comedians. And it's just it's kind of like a historic place that you want to keep alive. You know, that it's like a piece of history.
Well, buddy, all I can say is I'm so honored that you decided to participate in this show, because I, as I mentioned, watched you religiously growing up. It was one of my favorite shows, Cake Boss. And I remember I wrote to you when I was maybe, I'd say, 13. I wrote you a handwritten note, and you were so nice. I got an autographed picture back in the mail, and I still keep it, and I still treasure it after all these years. And aww, to actually think that I'm sitting here talking to you today, it's really an honor and a privilege for me and a pleasure. So thank you so much for making the time, and thank you for all you've done over the years with the Friars Club.
The honor is all mine, Joe. I appreciate it, brother, and thank you for those kind words. It means a lot to me, and we love the Friars Club. Let's keep it up.
Definitely. Buddy, thank you. Best to you and the family, and hope our paths cross again. I really appreciate it.
You got it, my friend. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Friars Club podcast. Please be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. For more information on the Friars Club, please visit friarsclub.com. We hope to see you there.